You just get me with no buffer, sorry. There's no thing that will cause you to quiet down and sit in your seats. I'm just going to talk goofy at you. Sit down. It's time to start this thing. Come inside and close that door right now. Sit down. Yeah, kids are gone. Let the kids go. Sorry. The children are not within the horizon of my concerns right now. Goodbye, children. Time to go. All right. There's nothing better than good coffee. Shh. I'm always stunned at how well that works. Good morning. See, you need to have something to have a little buffer, but today we get nothing. It's just me sort of up here. All right. This Michael asked me on Friday evening if I would please teach, which, you know, that sometimes goes really well and sometimes does not go as well. And I started putting this together for today, and it sort of went in an interesting direction, so I think it'll be interesting. So that guy right there, that infamous green check mark, I was doing an Antioch School certification, and the guy said, "Oh yeah, Michael Voss came to our church and talked with our leadership team about this, and I'm really concerned about the Antioch School because all you guys really care about is green check marks." And he said you could basically just copy each other's work and do anything you wanted, and I'm just worried that you're not even a real academic institution. And we talk about these things a lot, and Michael especially, I kind of want to get like a big coin made of that, like 4 inches, or just give it to him sometime so he can hang it up on his wall, t-shirt or something. We talk about these a lot, but people really don't understand them very well. We talk about our system a lot, and people who don't understand the motive behind this system, who don't understand how it's supposed to be put together, they don't get it. They think that we have abandoned the principles of church-based theological education and just become your average box-checking institution like any other college, except we're online, but we're not really online. But they think that we're some kind of academic people now, and not really what we set out to be when Build was established. The thing is, though, for those of us who live and work in the world of the Antioch School, we just look at those and we see results. That's what we're looking at when we see the green check marks. I don't care. They could be purple question marks or, you know, fuchsia corkscrews. It doesn't matter. The point is, we look at this and we see results. That's what the green check marks indicate to us. And the results come from the employment of a system. We're putting people through a course of training that is intended to get those results. So those rows of green check marks underneath the headings of the courses, that's the system that we're using to get to the results. And the system is in place because there's a strategy that we have to put leadership development into churches again. We think that's where it really belongs. And that strategy is the result of a philosophy that we have, this philosophy that we get from, among other places, 2 Timothy 2:2, "What you've heard from me in the presence of many witnesses, commit to faithful men who will be able to teach others also." So we see these guys down here, these green check marks, and think, okay, great, they've gone through a disciplined course of study based in their churches, using the philosophy of church-based theological education. So when I see green checkmark or hear Michael say green checkmark, I'm thinking the whole thing top to bottom. He's thinking the whole thing top to bottom. And not a lot of us understand that right now. We haven't invested, many of us just have not invested in really getting to understand this and what we're talking about. My perception is that most theological institutions do a bang-up job of putting knowledge inside people's heads. I'm an academic-y guy. I love having my head stuffed filled with knowledge. I'm that weirdo that writes the 25-page, single-spaced, dozen-and-a-half references, 125 footnote papers. That's like, for me, that's positively fun. And that's great if you're in an institution that is designed to stuff your head full of knowledge. We need to have knowledge. The thing is, if your character is flawed, your head full of knowledge is going to profit you nothing. Nothing. To be an effective leader in God's church, you have to not just have the knowledge of the faith and the ability to handle it in your head, you have to have a character that demonstrates to people what genuine Christian life actually looks like in the world. And you can only do that if you work on do serious work on your character. And regrettably, my perception is that formal theological education institutions, if they do anything at all, it's pretty minimal. In addition, you can graduate from a theological institution having done nothing to prepare yourself for the actual work of the ministry, other than maybe taking a homiletics class, you know, and giving a couple of practice sermons. Now, there are institutions that do better jobs of you know, having their students do internships in churches, but as a general matter, in universities are for education, and education is about what happens between your ears, inside your cranium. And my perception is, I could be wrong, but my perception is that most theological institutions don't do very much with the heart and the hands. They do a lot with the head, but not very much with the heart and the hands. But for us, when we think green check marks, we're thinking about these goals that we have for what a student would know the whole counsel of God. We have goals for what a student would be, what their character would be like, who they are as people, and we have goals around what they're able to do coming out of the Antioch school. Not just people with heads stuffed full of knowledge, but people who've actually done substantive, real ministry. Because if you don't, then you go to your church and maybe you find out that you were really cut out to be a mechanic and not a preacher, and now you're just hosed. That's why I've got these three words down at the bottom of the slide here. And in future, Michael and I have been working on a strategy for my teaching that would be oriented around this. So the small, mini little series of teachings around what we know, around who we are, around what we do, that would be linked together so that we can work on integrating those things. And so this right here, if you're an Antioch School student like David Deere is, I warned him that I was going to do this, so if you're an Antioch School student like David Deere and you log into your build cloud, this is what you see. But check it out. There's knowledge. So David has duly gotten his green check marks in the Acts course. That's your knowledge piece. He's coming to understand the whole counsel of God through his engagement with the Acts course, through his engagement with the Pauline epistles. Look at this over here. This is character development. We want him to understand who he is, how God's put him together. We want him to envision his life, where he's come from, where he is, what are his responsibilities, where is he going to go, what does he want to do in the world, under the guidance of mentors, character development. And here's the ministry side of things, the skill side of things. He needs to do some practicums, do the work of ministry, learn through the doing of the work of ministry, all those three things, and then he brings it together in a unified, integrated whole, such that he's able to do his ministry really effectively. So at least somebody in this room is checked out by now, because I'm talking about the Antioch School. And it's okay for you, Colin, because you just walked in, buddy. It's all right. somebody is looking at me right now thinking, who cares? I'm not a leader. What does any of this matter to me? I'm not going to be in the Antioch School. After all, Caleb, it's the Antioch School of church planting. I'm not going to do that unless they force me to. And leadership development, and I'm not a leader, and I'm probably never going to be. None of this makes any difference to me. There's at least one person who, if they're not thinking that consciously, that's their attitude. But Paul says about his mission, we proclaim Jesus warning and teaching everyone with all wisdom so that we may present everyone mature in Christ. I labor for this, striving with his strength that works powerfully in me. Randy taught on this, what gets me out of bed in the morning. That verse just walloped me in the face, and that changed the trajectory of my life. Thank you. But look there, everyone. Everyone. Not some special class or category of people. Everyone. All of us. Not just the people who do this job, who wear this thing. Everyone. We have left behind a set of paradigm ideas that divides the body in half into categories. If you were a philosophy nerd like me, you'd say there's an ontological difference between these two. In their being, they're different categories of thing, clergy, laity. And we're trying to leave behind this old paradigm way of looking at things and say, no. All of God's people are gifted unto ministry. All of God's people are equipped to do substantive work. All of God's people are like that. But the danger is this. The danger is that we've left that behind. We've said, nope, that's false. Clergy and laity, false. But then we let the paradigm sneak back in through the back door. Paradigms are powerful stuff. Once you've had your eyeballs tuned a certain way, imagine that you get LASIK to make your eyes see a certain way, okay? It's hard to not see that way. I forget that I'm wearing glasses a lot, but they shape how I look at things. So sure, we don't call them clergy. Sure, we don't call them laity. But you know what? He's a leader, and I'm not a leader. So that Antioch school nonsense, that's for him. That's not for me. I'm not interested in any of that crap. Well, we don't want that because that just takes the old paradigm, re-inscribes it, slaps a new label on it, and just continues on as it was before with some kind of ontological difference in our being between like this two-story house of faith. Leaders on top, everybody else on the bottom. No way to get between them, which is nonsense, not how God intended for things to be. In Paul's mind, there were categories of believer. But the categories in Paul's mind were, there's the more mature, and there's the less mature. And everybody should become the more mature. Everybody. In Pauline epistles class, sometimes people say, but how can you have a fully mature church if you're constantly having new Christians come in? Well, that's what a mature church looks like. And the new Christians come in and they begin to receive instruction. They're baptized. They begin to grow in their understanding of the faith. Maybe a year later, we say to them, hey, why don't you do the bread and the cup tonight? And then maybe 3 years after that, they're saying, hey, you know, I'm really interested in this. You know, I think I want to do the seam in. And 3 years after that, you know, bang, they're leading, you know, in a church on their own right. More mature and less mature. And it's the responsibility in Paul's mind. The goal is for all of us to move into the more mature category. So think about the training system that we've got. I'm a systems nerd. I really enjoy seeing the way that systems integrate. But let me show you this. So a person who's born into our churches has this trajectory, an integrated trajectory, where they start with hearing the biblical meta-narrative. Like my kids now are able to say, oh, Joseph, he was the one that had the coat and his brothers were jealous. They shoved him down inside a pit and then he got sold to Egypt. I couldn't do that until I was in my 30s, connect those stories. Then they start studying and memorizing verses. They start receiving actual instruction, not really rigorous instruction, but they start learning more about how these things hook together. Well, then they would move into Envision Life with Nate. And they would begin, now, this is not a social club, you know, we don't have youth group because we want our kids to have something fun to do. No, now we're moving into actual real instruction in the faith. They're going to start doing things like writing author's intention statements for every book in the Bible, and they're going to be doing the first principles, and they're going to be challenged to get into actual ministry. Well, then they graduate from high school. What can we do with them then? Hey, you know, you've proved faithful up to this point. You're growing in your faith. Let's move you into Immerse. You're going to have a super in-depth summer where you're going to be under mentorship, doing life to the end, going through the Acts course maybe for the first time, and really solidifying commitments. Well, as this individual ages and grows a little bit more, eventually we're going to start saying, hey, you did Acts and Pauline. Tell me how well you did that. Show me your work. Maybe you better do that again. Or maybe it's time for you to move on to Essentials and Leaders. And the more mature they get, the more we're going to be saying, wow, you know, you're doing substantive ministry now, and I'm worried that there are some gaps in your thinking. So we want to put you through the certificate of ministry just to close any gaps that might be there, and so forth. And so what will happen is, if we think about our body in a more mature, less mature way and not the leader, non-leader way, where do leaders come from? Well, obviously they come from your pool of more mature people. So that if you think to yourself, oh man, this church has grown just beyond its capacity. There are 45 people packed into this living room. There's so many that we actually have to put them in rows now. This is ridiculous. We need to plant a new church. Yeah, but who's going to lead that church? Well, duh, Mark Bland's going to lead that church, because you're drawing from your pool of more mature brothers and investing them with ministry responsibilities. That's how it's supposed to work, and not this leader, non-leader, two-story Bible kind of a way, two-story community kind of a way. The problem is some people are just lazy. That might not be it. It might be that they have just no time. No time. Or maybe they're just not interested. I think a lot of us understand this stuff, and a lot of us just don't yet, or haven't bought into it, or haven't yet committed themselves at the level that they need to, where they say, no, I'm not going to do this thing over here. Yes, I'm going to do this thing over here now. It took me a long time to actually get into it. You know, Randy's message on Colossians was one of those things that put me over the top, as it were. A lot of us are just not doing this. Because I think that clergy-laity distinction gets smuggled in through the back door of our thinking, and then we say to ourselves, well, that's not for me. That's for the leaders, but I'm not a leader, so that's not for me. But if Paul's aim is to present everyone mature in Christ, help me understand how everyone doesn't mean everyone. So we need to get serious about this stuff, because that's God's intention for us. And this is the system that we use. So the Antioch School of Church Planting and Leadership Development, yes, absolutely, you might be part of a church plant. And if we're doing a good job of helping you mature, you're going to be ready to be in that church plant. And eventually, when that guy goes to start that church, we're just going to tap you on the shoulder and say, hey, brother, I need you to step up and lead this thing. If we look at it from the more and less mature category, like Paul does, then we're going to be ready for that. And we're going to take some of this stuff seriously. So I know I've sort of shoved you a little bit. Sorry, not sorry, I guess. I'd like for you to just discuss at your tables where your thinking is on these matters. I mean, there's a danger being in this church that we think, oh, I'm getting it like through osmosis. I'll take my build binder and just hold it next to my head and hope that it will sort of filter through somehow. Or we've learned the jargon and we can say church-based theological education, but we have no concept what that really means. Where are we at with this? So why don't you do that at your tables for a few minutes, and then we'll proceed from there. That this has been stimulating thus far. Shh. So this no be do thing, this is not novel to me. This is, if you take the leader's course, you will read an article, a reading from Jonathan Chow, who describes a liberally stolen the no goal, be goal thing from him. And, you know, you read some of the paradigm papers, Jeff's been talking about knowledge, character, and skill for years. So it's not like I'm making this crap up, you know. I'm trying to build on stuff that my forebears have built on me and just stand on that a little bit. The thing is, though, once you get this idea of knowledge, character, skill inside your head, you cannot unsee it. And then when you read the text in the New Testament, it's everywhere you go. It's there in all kinds of interesting little places. I used to read the New Testament from the perspective of, systematic theologians or reformed thinkers will, this thing is a truth mine. So I can open the pages and then all true statements will tumble forth from it. Woohoo! And then I'd start reading it and be weird and confusing, and one minute he's talking about this theological idea and then he's doubling back and talking about their character and then moving on from there to excel still more. But if you get in your head the idea that what Paul is after, or any of the New Testament writers are after, is the consistent growth of our knowledge and our character and our skill in ministry, then it just makes sense. And so I just pulled this verse, not at random exactly, but a little bit, and I really like this translation. Going then, make all the nations into disciples, baptizing them in the name of the Father and of the Son and of the Holy Spirit, and teaching them to obey everything that I've commanded you. Okay, great. That's knowledge, right? Pure and simple. I don't think so, though. The participle, going, is modifying the main point. The main command is disciple. That's the command. Going is a modifier. Here's how you might be doing that. As you go. Go, therefore, is a terrible translation because it makes it sound like go is an imperative, but it's not. As you are going, disciple all the nations. You cannot do that just as you go about your life. Some of us will go, I suppose, but most of us won't. So if we're going to be doing this as we are going, we're going to have to have the kind of character that is attuned to opportunities to proclaim the gospel and do that in an effective way. Oh, but that gets us over into skill too, right? There's a knowledge component of this as well. Teaching them to obey all that I've commanded you implies that there's a content being taught. How can you obey all that Christ has commanded if I never tell you what he commanded in the first place? Teaching them implies a content taught. Teaching them to obey, not just teaching them to obey. It aggravates me sometimes when people will say, oh, the Great Commission is about going, baptizing, and teaching. Yeah, but that divorces teaching, the mental stuff, from character and skill. In a way that's totally unnatural and foreign to the New Testament and the way that Paul thought about things. It divides them up discreetly. We live paradigmatically. We live with the legacy of the Enlightenment that wants to chop things up and divide it down into discrete categories and create an encyclopedia. The idea was that an encyclopedia would be a document that contained literally all human knowledge. That's an ambitious project. But it does so, it has to do so by breaking it down into discrete packages. Well, there's an article about the Vietnam War. But you can't understand that unless you understand the history of China's colonial ambitions toward Vietnam. And you can't understand that unless you understand the way that China became a unified kingdom. And you can't understand that without understanding French colonialism and why the heck were we there in the first place? I mean, the way we think chops up into bits. So we divide what we know from who we are and what we do. And then we think that if we keep these little packets, then we'll be doing the good Christian work that we're supposed to be doing. And obviously, Caleb, his thing is right in that area there. So I'm that guy. And then maybe Nate is, since he does the Envision Life stuff, maybe Nate's our doer. And Don Johnson, the elder, since he's been faithfully serving in our church for decades, maybe he's the guy who has the character piece nailed. But that's just a fragmented way of looking at it. And if there's anything I know about Jeff, it's that fragmentation is the devil. Because Christianity is not supposed to be chopped up into little hunks and sampled. That's not how it's supposed to work. And so as we advance in our understanding, perhaps we get to the point where we can say, yeah, sure, I can see how these things overlap and how they relate to each other. I mean, if you really believe that Jesus was raised from the dead, and that there's and that new creation has begun to take place in your heart, then you're going to change and do some things with that. And if your heart's changed, you know, so we can see some overlap. But it's still fragmented. Because it still positions it as though those are three discrete things that we can attack and deal with as though they're not actually the same thing, when the reality is it's just all of a piece. It's just all one thing. And the one thing that it is a genuine, real Christian life. This is what integration looks like. So I'm not our resident knower. I have to do all of that stuff. If I believe, but my attitude doesn't change, then I'm going to do a really genuinely awful job as a father. And I really don't want to do that. If I believe, but I haven't had my character change, then I'm going to be... I mean, if you start using Google to look up, to see the autocomplete options, Christians are, one of them is, it's almost always the same two, judgmental and hypocritical. So if I'm teaching it, but not doing it, then who's going to follow me if I'm a hearer only and not a doer of the word? This was the problem of the Pharisees, as I'm given to understand. This is what real Christian life is supposed to look like. Where we receive a call to believe in the best news ever, as the result of which our hearts are transformed, our lives change substantively, as the result of which we are new people in the world, in our communities, in our families, in our churches, utterly different people, doing totally different things than the pagans would do. And if that's not true of us, ooh, that's not good. Read John 3, 1 John 3. The problem in that John is dealing with there is that people have left his ministry circle and have gone around to his churches saying, hey, Jesus, oh, also this other stuff over here, like these sort of proto-Gnostic ideas. And so John needs to let them know how to distinguish between the true brothers and these false guys. And how does he do that? What's the way he does that? Does he say, look at their doctrinal statement and make sure they're not heretics? No, he says, if they don't love the brothers and they do sin, they're not genuine brothers. So if we're living a lifestyle where we say Jesus, 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 but we look totally indistinguishable from all the pagans that surround us, problem. There will be many that say to me on that day, Lord, Lord, and I'll say, depart from me, I know you not. Who's worthy to enter the kingdom of heaven? Only him who does the will of God, my Father. Oh. What this leads to, if we do this, is a new set of glasses to wear to look at the world. So everything I look at now, I'm looking at through the lens of a really genuine Christian worldview. I've had my mind utterly wiped clean by the gospel, and now I need to rebuild it all. I can't be sinning in these egregious ways anymore. I need to change who I am. I need to be more compassionate, more loving. I have to assume the best of people. There's a kid who goes around Ames on a little scooter in the street. Just 5 years ago, I would have thought, what a freak. But as a result of struggling with mental illness and other things, now I look at that kid and I think, what am I seeing right now? Am I seeing mental illness? Neglect? Developmental challenges? What has gone wrong in the world that has produced this thing that I'm seeing? That's growth and compassion, like, yay me, go me. No, that's hard fought for me, and it hard fought for all of us. And if we can integrate the things that we know to be true about the world in light of Jesus, in light of the good news, with who we become, if we become transformed through the, if the Spirit transforms us through the renewing of our mind, if we transform into the people who love one another and serve our neighbors, then every single thing we do is going to get processed through that grid. Everything. Everything. Yeah, again. Because the trouble is, ones of us get this, ones of us don't. It's okay. It's all right. Everybody starts at the same place developmentally. Brand new believer with their mind on fire with the gospel, and then we have to mature. It's okay. It's okay to be in the less mature category. It's not okay to stay there. And regrettably, people stay there. They reach a level where they think, yep, I'm good now, I'm going to skate. I mean, I have a bad reputation, a well-earned bad reputation in my younger, less compassionate days, for challenging people to get into, I'm still in my less compassionate days, but I'm just slightly more compassionate now. But I developed a bad reputation for being unsympathetic. Why aren't you in class, man? Get in class. Why aren't you doing Immerse this summer? Get on it, okay? There are good reasons why you might have to check out. You have a miscarriage, and now your wife's dealing with just crippling depression. That's, dude, take time. Brand new baby, lost your job. You name it. Lots of great reasons why you might have to skip out. Not permanently. Not permanently. There are great excuses not to be in class. My mom died last night. Dude, there are no good excuses, none, for failing to engage in a developmental process that brings you from less to more mature. There are no good excuses. There just aren't. There's laziness, there's disinterest, there's selfishness, but there are no good excuses. Do we all have to get there overnight? Of course not. Timothy's still getting instruction from Paul when he's in his late 30s, early 40s. That's where I'm at now. I still need development and growth. Boy, do I. Ask Annie. Ask my boys. But there is no excuse for plateauing. and there is no excuse for going backward. Titus Sheely, recently we were taking a walk. I have a hand in his development, which is a real joy to me. We were taking a walk recently, and he mentioned this message that Michael, not message really, whatever the thing was that Michael did at Easter, not this year, but the year before. And he mentioned how Michael like really, really substantively challenged us through tears. So as this thing was developing for this morning, I messaged Titus and said, hey man, would you please look that up for me? And so he said, yeah, sure, I've been meaning to listen through it again. And so he gave me some notes, and then I said, I can't find the link, will you please give me the link? And so he did, because he's amazing, and I love him. Love you, Titus. And I listened through that, and what I heard was just really strikingly sharp. He said this. I'm going to read a bunch of things that he said, but because I want to build to a thing. Paul wrote Romans because he wanted them to have a completely new Christian worldview in light of what Christ has done. In light of Christ's death and resurrection, he wants them to have a completely full understanding of what God has been doing since the beginning of time. That's the worldview, and this is exactly what your leaders here are wanting for you. I think sometimes people look at those of us that have responsibility among the churches and think that we sort of just like the task of like hectoring you to get into gear and get into action. That's I mean, not really. I don't want to like constantly be sort of bumping you in the backside. Come on, get moving, come on. No, I want you to see what we have seen. This glorious, beautiful gospel that affects everything throughout all time. This plan of God's that begins with the creation of a beautiful, wonderful creation that then goes wrong. And instead of just wiping it out and starting again, he works through human beings to make it right. And now we're part of that. And we can spend all of our lives contributing to God's purposes. That's so amazing. That's what we want for you to have. But he then said this. He said, you know the gospel and you're in the gospel, but you're not fully established in it. I remember when he said that. That was, you are not fully established in it. You're not. Some of you are adopting other worldviews and you're mixing them in. That's not the worldview Christ has for us. He wants to fully establish us, complete, and present us before Christ as completely mature. Every single one of your life decisions should be based out of the worldview that Paul talks about in Romans. That's our job as leaders. We're supposed to fully establish you because we love you and we care about you and we want to present you mature before Christ. I'm not in this for the paychecks or the fame. I'm not in it for, you know, renown. I'm in it because I love you guys. I love you. Some of you I've known my entire life. I love you. We as a leadership team, we love you. We're not doing this for fun. It has its moments, but we're doing it because we love you and want to see you grow and mature. I just desperately, desperately desire to see you fall in love with this thing that God is doing in the world and let it change you. And I feel just, I mean, I'm not crying, but Michael was when he said this, but I feel exactly this. I so badly want you to understand. I just so badly want you to understand. Not because I'm going to get anything out of it, but because you are going to get everything out of it. I just so badly want you to understand. In April of 2003, I'm great at segueing. I found myself lying in my sleeping bag on the asphalt of a runway in An Nasiriya, Iraq, so cold at night, so incredibly cold. And I couldn't sleep. It's like 30 degrees. All I've got to keep me warm is my sleeping bag. I'm there just like staring at the sky. Of course, we had bombed Iraq into, you know, little bitty shards at that point, and so there was not another human light around for 1,000 miles in any direction other than, you know, fires or whatever. And if you've never been in that position, you probably think that's doctored in some way, but it's not. You subtract light from the night sky, and this is what you get. So many stars, it feels like a physical presence pressing down on you. You feel like you're looking into eternity itself. The sky is so crowded with stars, you're just wondering why it's not brighter out. The Milky Way is like this silver, glittering ribbon stretching from horizon to horizon. And if I had had a sat phone in my sleeping bag and had called you up on that night in 2003, no words of mine would have been able to describe what I was seeing. None. You have to just see it for yourself. You have to. I want so badly for you to understand. That's where we're at. Because I look at this and my brain explodes. Just lights on fire. I mean, you could probably see that I'm a little amped up, you know, I'm really excited. Because the King of the universe, the God who created all that is and was and ever will be, made a good world, and he set humans into that world to be his priests, his image, to reflect his glory and wisdom into the world and to reflect the worship of creation back to him. And we thought we could do a better job and do something more. We'll all go ahead and worship creation itself. And then he made a promise to a man and said, I'll bless all the families of the world through your family. And then he turned that family into a nation and he covenanted with that nation. All of the nations around you are going to see how wise you are because of your obedience to the law. And then they screwed that up. And he covenanted with David, I will keep your throne established forever. And he promised through the prophets a new covenant and a Messiah who would come and fulfill all of this. And then the Messiah came and all these promises start to be fulfilled. And he dies and then he rises again. And God has decisively defeated death and he's reversed the effects of sin. And now things are little shoots of green new creation are coming up everywhere, and we can participate in that. We get to be part of that. We get to be the people who are his agents and his tangible kingdom in the world permanently. So that if you're sitting down in the hallway looking after little kids, you are doing God's work. And if you are dealing with somebody who is just blitzed out of their mind, having drunk so much, and now you have to deal with them in your capacity as a law enforcement professional, you can do that lovingly and compassionately, and you're doing God's work. You can print books that go to leaders and students all across the United States and contribute to their development in the faith, and you're doing God's work. I am just so in love with this idea that all of life now comes into the same category, that the things that I know the Spirit will use them to transform me, that I'll be more effective in the world, that through my actions, the wisdom of God will be made, well, not, through my actions, the Word of God can be adorned, and through working as a community, the manifold wisdom, the multifaceted wisdom of God will be made known, not just here and now, but permanently and throughout the entire cosmos. That's what real Christianity is, and that's what produces a view of the world that changes us. And I just want so badly for you to understand this. Michael, in that message also, he said something. He said, how do I know it? How do I know you're not established? I can see it. I can see it in your decisions. Do you schedule your whole life around your church and its activities? I mean, I have in the past, I try not to anymore, but do you say, well, I don't have time for that? Okay, do what one of our own did and just like wipe everything off the calendar, pop in the three church things that you absolutely must attend to and schedule from there. And if that means your kid can't be in volleyball, sorry, I can't do fantasy football anymore. Maybe not forever, but for a time. Maybe my date nights become Saturday morning date walks. Maybe, you know, ask me how much TV I read and how many books I read for fun. Not very many. Do you go through your course of study to become an educator and get not have to look for jobs because you're being recruited by schools to come and teach, but instead say, yeah, I'm going to take a job in Des Moines at a pretty sketchy school because I am just so committed to this body, this group, and the things that we are doing in this world, and I want to look at my life work in this school, in this part of Des Moines, as part of my seeking the welfare of the city. Is that the perspective that we have? I look at that and I just see, it's hard to describe, I just want you so badly to understand that when we understand God's purposes, we can't but be changed by that. And if we're changed by that, but we can't but do something on the basis of that. So I have a second set of questions that I want you to discuss. I want to just say here, I know I'm not saying anything new to you, okay? I know that this is not like innovative, wow, Caleb has really taken us in a brand new direction. I'm not. I'm just saying what we've been saying all along in my own words and arranged according to the way that makes it make sense in my mind. So please don't read me as trying to do my own thing here. I'm just calling us to the same thing we've all been calling us to, which is real Christianity. So do these and we'll come back. I've asked a couple people, because of the challenging nature of what I'm saying this morning, I've asked several people if they would just be my volunteers, so you know who you are. So we'll do this discussion and then we'll come back and we'll hear from those. I get super excited about this stuff. And the danger is that I come across as hectoring, which is really not what I mean to do, because I legitimately am so excited about this stuff. I am just so, so thrilled to have a way to put my life together so all of the pieces fall under the same guiding principle, which is, what can I do that will please God today? That's it. That's like, if you wanted to boil my life philosophy down as far as it would go, that would be about it. And I get that I'm asking you to do hard stuff. I'm asking you to reprioritize your life. I'm asking you to make substantive changes. I'm asking you to get moving on your development, maybe for the first time in years. I get it. That's tough. But I still have to do tough things too. You know, last week I had to wrestle through a set of decisions that was really hard, that occupied a ton of my like emotional and mental processing power, and I wanted hardcore to go this way, and I had to just get through that and say, no, I gotta go this way instead. And it was hard. I know I'm asking you to do hard stuff, but we're the people that have the Spirit living in us, so we can do it, I think. I'm confident we can do it. So I don't want you to have to react. I'm meant to challenge you this morning. I have like hold music happening over there. So I didn't want you to have to react to this sort of off the cuff, so I asked several people if they would do that for me. And so where should we begin? Let's Titus, you want to lead us out, man? Nothing elaborate, just tell me what you're thinking, dude. I may not have warned him I was going to do that. I can't remember. I'm bad at things. Answer the questions or just tell me what your thoughts are at right now.
I guess we're sitting here talking about... We started off with talking about how we have no be do as... Like, which ones do you need to mature and whatnot, and got to the point of, you know, you can't fragment them, like you said, even in the maturing process. Like the diagram of Matthew 28 up there, you had obeying as skill and character, that it's both at the same time. Or right now, Mark's leading a Pauline class, that he's, you're doing all three. You have to, you know, relate to the class and have good character and show that. It's in his house, has kids there. You're showing how to be a father and a husband in that, as well as teaching and doing the work and knowing the material at the same time that you're... Mm-hmm. I mean, everything is integrated together. You can't separate any of them, even in the maturing process. Otherwise, mm-hmm. you just fall back into that fragmentation mindset of, well, I need to focus on what I'm knowing here mm-hmm. now, or I need to start doing some of these things, but it's... You know, Paul, like, I believe, therefore, we believe, therefore, we preach. Like, there is a character and a knowledge base that spurs into action. Your motive, mm-hmm. they're inseparable. It's, mm-hmm. if you really get it, then you're going to be doing it.
And what an advantage you've got to be sort of coming to this stuff at the developmental phase in life that you're at now. I mean, you don't have decades worth of bad habits developed. Well, maybe you do, I don't know. I'm still
two.
Getting to know him, you know.
Only two.
Only two, okay. But can you run that over to my dad over here? Colin, you can sit, Titus. Or stand up too is also fine. Just whatever you're feeling. So you're on the other end of this. I'm guessing that there are nobody in the room that would look at you and say, oh, he's definitely a younger man. He is definitely a younger man. I'm in that awkward phase where to some people they look at me and go, ooh, he's old. And to other people they look at me and think, man, I remember when you were a baby. So you're on the other end of the spectrum from him. I'm sorry, it's just true. I love you. What are you thinking about?
What am I thinking about these questions?
Anything that's on your mind, yeah. Well, not literally anything. This is where Michael would start talking about the price of corn or something.
Yeah, not having heard the first part of the message makes it a little more difficult. One thing that I'm aware of in my own life, what substantive changes you need to make in your life to reach full maturity. I've had the opportunity, and all of us do, because we're all challenged to do this, is to be encouraging and exhorting and admonishing mm-hmm. each other in our growth and progress. And I've had a lot of opportunity to do that this week, and don't have a very good grasp of where things are, right? I know the principles, but I can't go and say, look, here's the scripture that just takes you right through the process that we're talking about here, right through the thought process. And so that's a significant, when you begin to try to help people, it's good to know what to know how to find the material, right? Mm-hmm. So anyway, that's a...
Well, and that statement, that latter statement, is a combination of those three things. He has to have the knowledge of where to go. He's got to have the character orientation to help others, and he has to have the skill to actually implement that. Right? But they're not three things. It's just one thing.
Yeah.
Can you run that over to... Okay.
Wouldn't ask me to run that, right?
No. I wouldn't even ask me to run that, man. My knees are shot. Stupid Navy.
Me a specific question, please.
Sure. When you're homeschooling your girls and
yes.
your boys, how do you think about the integration of those three, how does that hit you as a mom?
Well, obviously the B part is extremely important in being a mom. If I'm not being, then I'm not a good mom. But with our homeschool, one of the ways that I've integrated both my development and my kids' development is to be really intentional to include learning about the Bible and praying in mm-hmm. our homeschool.
Mm-hmm.
And also including them, like my girls sit in on our Pauline epistles class mm-hmm. that we host. And obviously most of it goes over their heads, but they know that they know that we're seriously studying the Bible. They know we're talking about Paul, and they catch bits, and mm-hmm. that's enough for now.
Mm-hmm.
So that's been good for both my continued development and bringing them along.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
What else?
You say learning about the Bible and praying.
Mm-hmm.
Those are not different things.
I know.
I mean, but they're different activities.
Yeah.
Right. But in her mind, if you're doing this, you also need to be doing that, and you need to be this person. This is what integration looks like. Can you run this over to this side? I asked that Jamie West has sort of a similar mind to as I do. Is she over there? Okay, that's fine. David Deere. You just jumped in. Okay, so one of I have learned my Socratic discussion technique from Bill Burns, which means that Randy does this Aikido thing where he gently sort of takes your energy, and I and Bill, we are just far more pugilistic about it. So I would tell these guys, don't give me excuses for why you don't have a project. Just bring a project. It can be literally one sentence. Just bring something. And David always did. He would always bring something, and sometimes it was like three sentences, but it was always something. And I'm interested, you've really dived into the training pretty faithfully. I mean, so how are you thinking about that relative to the challenge to become fully Christian, really genuinely Christian? What is the Antioch School doing for you in that respect? Are we just stuffing your head full of knowledge?
Yes. No. Oh. One of the earlier questions was, where are you lacking or something like that? Yeah. I don't remember what it was. So a year or two ago, I would have said in the knowledge component.
Hmm.
The character, I was probably okay, but I didn't have the knowledge to do anything, really.
Hmm.
So the last couple of years, going through the coursework and doing the projects, I think I've picked up a lot of that knowledge. So now where I feel like I'm moving into, I need to work on the skill area a little bit more.
Hmm.
Which will be a fun challenge.
what that'll mean, though, in the life of his church is there's another person who knows what they're talking about, who is in the process of capturing the full counsel of God, who's being actually changed by it and starting to feel the burden of needing to do something with this. That will be a giant boon to his church. That will be so good for his church if he's able to pull those things together and make them happen all at once. All right, Mark, can you say a little something? Yeah, that one right there, and then we'll I think we'll land it. Unless, are you desperate to talk, John? John Hala, are you desperate? No, okay, good.
Anything?
I mean, not literally anything, but
I think I'll go for the hard one that nobody has said anything about. How would you assess the maturity of your church? And we actually didn't get a chance to talk about it at our table.
Yeah, several of your church members are sitting right there with you.
Thinking about our church, there's a image that you used when we went through, I think it was leaders course together.
Okay.
Thinking about, is one of the ideas you even talked about here too, about, you know, there's not a distinction between leaders and non-leaders, but there's this image that you had about like the more mature reaching back and grabbing a hold of those who are less mature and say, link going up. Mm-hmm. And thinking about our church in that way too, I see that. I see people who are more mature reaching back and pulling up the people who are behind them, either in age or just in maturity. And I see our church moving in that direction. We're making steps forward in certain areas. You know, we all still have our areas that we need growth in, but as a church, we are making strides ahead. And, you know, we need to keep pushing. Otherwise, we're going to, you know, find a nice flat spot and, you know, take a nap. But instead, we need to keep pushing up the mountain of maturity. Mm-hmm. So,
all together.
What's that?
All together.
All together.
The image that's always in my mind is that you're almost your entire life. It's one up, one down. You know, I would not be where I'm at if I had not done Immerse with Randy, or not Immerse, but participated in those classes and let him whack me around. And then ahead of him is another guy, and then coming along behind me is another person, and there's a person down there behind him, and eventually I'm going to die, and that's going to be sad. But you know, there'll be another person that I've been pulling up the staircase behind me, and hang on to that if you would. I don't want to soften the impact of a challenge per se, but the nut of it here, family, is we as the folks that, I mean, the people who teach were judged more harshly. I mean, the people, those of us who are responsible for our churches, love you so much. That's why we're doing all of this stuff. That's the motive. We just love you and desire for you to come to full maturity in the faith. It's what we're asking for you to do is not exceptional or unusual. It's what all of us ought to be doing. Not overnight, not all at once, but we're only wanting you to move into maturity in the faith, because we're going to have to hand this work off to another generation, and then they're going to have to hand it off to another generation. And the passion that we have around this stuff, the reason why I can get super, super amped about this is I watched the first generation doing it. Don and my dad and John Hale and Mark Stevenson, you know, all of these guys, men and women who did this thing, and now they're handing off some of that to us. Well, I'm deeply aware that I'm going to be the old guy in the room pretty soon and need to hand it on to somebody else. So I just love the church. I love you guys. We do, and this is why we. This is the motive. This is why we want to do it. I'm not trying to be up on you. I'm trying to lovingly call you to be the person, the people, the community that God intends for you to be. So, would you, Titus? Would you pray us out? Would you be willing to do that? Is that too much?
Yes.
You're pretty good on your feet.
Sure.
Okay. Thanks.
Father, thank you for letting us all be here together, getting back together into the Sunday morning swing and teaching time, and just the encouragement it is, and the kind of rebuke and push to make sure that we're centered on you and your plan and the gospel, that would be truly inspiring to our lives, Father, not just something that we tack on or fragment our lives into these different areas, but that we understand that it is a lifestyle, it is our new life in Christ, that's what it looks like, is to be engaged in all of these things, our character, our skill, and our knowledge of you, to be fully mature, and just that you'd help us to do that, and that we'd build each other up as a family, and that we would see each other as that, and continue to grow towards you, and be fruitful in your work. I pray this in Christ's name. Amen.
Thanks, kid.